Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater in New Jersey. Today is Sunday, July 9th, 2023. The share ID numbers for Friday, July 7th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 20,422, that's 20422. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 20,423, that's 20423. This morning, A Vision for You presents The Recovered Life, Simple, Daily Big Book Instructions. The Big Book was written as a set of directions for doing the steps quickly and effectively. It's not a book of theory or philosophy. It offers a clear, step-by-step approach for your recovery. The 12 steps are introduced in Chapter 5 of the Big Book with these words. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. The freedom and happiness as the result of a spiritual awakening are based on these 12 simple steps. The exciting thing about the 12 steps is that they teach us how to live. Once we know the simple daily design of living and the principles of living a successful life, we find that we not only get over the problems we see, but we avoid many other problems we would have had. The miracle is that all this is boiled down into 12 simple steps which anybody can apply. With step 10, the Big Book tells us sanity has returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. For you and I, food. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. However, the Big Book does warn us, we are not cured. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Steps 10, 11, and 12 describe a personal submission of our will to constant evaluation, improved conscious contact, and consistent thought and action in service of others. The spiritual surgery and the healing of recovery come from continued practice and growth, simple daily actions in our lives, day after day, month after month, year after year, as an essential part of the recovered life. Joining us this morning to share on this topic is Stephen G., a recovered compulsive overeater from Canada. Always grateful for Stephen's clear, simple message of depth and weight. So it's with great appreciation that I welcome Stephen to the line this morning. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Leah. Thanks a lot for that great introduction. So my name is Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Canada, in Toronto. And I'm going to talk today about what a day looks like for a recovered compulsive overeater. So that the title of my talk is The Recovered Life, Simple Daily Big Book Instructions. And I chose this topic because for a couple of reasons, but the main reason was it seems to be a commonly asked question whenever I hear other recovered compulsive overeaters speak or where I've spoken, which is, what does your day look like? And I believe the answers to this question are in the Big Book. The Big Book gives specific, very simple instructions. And they're simple, but they're not easy. But they are simple. My talk today assumes a couple of things. The first thing it assumes is that we've been entirely abstinent, and that we've worked steps 1 through 9 with a recovered sponsor, and we've experienced a spiritual awakening. And for newcomers, that idea of a spiritual awakening may be a very foreign concept, but basically what it means is that we get neutrality around the food. We're no longer obsessed, constantly thinking about it, and we also feel peace and serenity. And my focus today is going to be on the daily instructions that are outlined in step 10 and step 11 primarily. I'm briefly going to touch on a couple of things in step 12, but step 12 is a huge topic and I think a Sunday special edition of its own. And if you're a newcomer, welcome. And some of what I say may be new and may not make sense yet. That's pretty normal. But I encourage you to keep coming back. And when you're ready, find a recovered sponsor to guide you through these steps quickly as possible. The second reason I chose this topic is because if I look back in my own experience of recovery, and I look at the people who I've guided through the steps as a sponsor, the most common reason for relapse has either been a lack of understanding of what the directions are in these steps, or an unwillingness to do them. And we learn with time, certainly I've learned with time, that there really are only two teachers in this disease. The first one is the pain of the disease. It's the pain of the disease that will motivate me to take action. And then once I'm motivated to take action, and then it's the big book, that's the second teacher. It will give me specific instructions. And if I follow them, I'll get a consistent outcome, which is I'll have access to this power. And it can't be described, it can only be experienced. But it's a power that removes this obsession and allows me to lead a normal life. So what I'm going to touch on today is a few things. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to briefly talk about my own experience of the disease. But I'm not going to spend very much time on that because we're really focused on solutions. But I'll share a few things so that hopefully some of you can relate to my experience. Then I'm going to talk about my experience of recovery in OA. Then I'm going to tell you about how I found the Vision for You meetings and discovered the big book. Then the main part of my talk is going to be focusing on what the specific instructions are for a day in the life of a recovered compulsive overeater, with a focus on the instructions on step 10, step 11, and a little bit of step 12. And then the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to just describe what a day looks like for me, and I'll give a few specific examples of how this works in my life. So let's start with my experience of the disease. So I'm sure like many of you, early in my life, food took on an unusually large part of my life. I had an unusual attraction to eating that none of my friends had, none of my family members. I grew up in a relatively large family. I've got 5 siblings. But this was normal for me. And I enjoyed it. I didn't think anything of it. And I thought I was a pretty normal person. I didn't undergo a lot of the childhood traumas that I've heard other people share. I mean, my family was not perfect, but I had a relatively normal upbringing. And I had friends. I played sports. I went to school. I went to university. I got a job. So I thought I was normal. But in my 20s, I gained 100 pounds. And then for the next 15 years, it was a struggle of constantly gaining weight and losing weight, gaining weight and losing weight. And so the manifestation of the disease that I saw at that time in my life was weight gain. I couldn't see the other things, although they were there. I still thought I was normal. So I addressed it using all the things that other people do, you know, dieting, exercising. And I'd lose weight, but then I'd gain it back immediately. And I got more and more and more frustrated, more and more frustrated, more and more frustrated. I tried everything, seeing a nutritionist, getting a personal trainer, all these different things. And I experienced what I like to think of, like to describe as the indignities of compulsive overeating. And in my case, those were related to obesity. Of course, obesity is not a feature of everybody's disease, but certainly it was in mine. I was a person, I played ice hockey very competitively, and so it didn't make any sense for me to to gain large amounts of weight. And I'd see people who knew me when I was playing competitively, and then would see me when I'd gained 100 pounds. And you just see the look in their eyes, but just of confusion, like, what happened to you? I hated looking at pictures of myself because my weight was always different. Having breasts, not being able to fit into clothes, not wanting to wash clothes because they'd get tight. And so I'd wear the same thing kind of over and over and over again. Thighs rubbing together, getting sores, not feeling comfortable sitting in a plane, doing up my seatbelt, all these different kind of indignities. But I still thought I was normal, and I try to hide, try to not focus on those things, not focus on those things, not focus on those things. And it became clear with time that there was a problem, but I didn't really have a solution. So my experience of recovery in OA. Early in my life, I think it was probably in my late 20s, I met a man incidentally through my work, just in passing. And he told me he'd lost 125 pounds. And he was sitting in front of me with a normal body weight, very peaceful. And something seemed odd about that to me, because anytime I had lost weight, it was like I was holding on for dear life. I was holding my breath. There was no peace about it. And I asked him how he'd done it, and he said he'd done it through an organization called Overeaters Anonymous. And at the time, I vaguely had an idea that there was something wrong with me, but I wasn't completely ready to admit it. And so I made a mental note of it. And years later, when I was struggling, I finally went to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting and snuck in. Didn't want anybody to see me. Seems ridiculous now. Snuck in. And I thought, these people are crazy. All the talk about God and holding hands at the end of the meeting, I didn't want any part of it. So I left and went back to trying my own solutions. And then I came back a few years later, And then about 14 years ago, I came back to Overeaters Anonymous. And I would say that I stuck. I mean, I kept coming back. In the first 3 years, I took what I needed and left the rest. With predictable results. So I had periods of abstinence and then very quickly back into relapse, over and over and over. But I kept coming back because it was, I started to understand that there was something wrong with me, although I didn't fully grasp it yet. I worked part of the steps, but not completely. I didn't fully understand the idea of entire abstinence. But it was a safe place to come to, where at least people understood me, and I got better. Things were better, but I kept having relapses. And then about 3 years in, I had a series of relapses that were like I'd never seen before. And where that I didn't leave my house for 3 weeks except to go and buy food. And when I went and bought food, I couldn't look the checkout person in the eye. I basically went from my couch watching TV back to my bed, to my couch, to my bed, to my couch, to my bed, just eating. And my clothes were covered in stains, the wrappers of various foods on the floor, my mouth sore, my face swollen from all the sugar and salt I had consumed. I couldn't find a comfortable position. I didn't want to talk to anybody. And the only thing I could think of that would make me feel better would be really killing myself. And then I finally grasped that there's something very, very wrong with me. I'm not normal. And so I went back to the meetings, and I started to take it seriously. I got a sponsor. I figured out abstinence. In retrospect, it was not entire abstinence, but it certainly was a beginning. And I worked the 12 steps. And that was about 11 years ago. I haven't had a binge since. Gradually, I got down to a fairly stable, healthy body weight. And things were much better. But it didn't feel stable. It felt very dependent on the tools. It felt very dependent on contacting a sponsor urgently at times. It didn't feel like what I now understand to be the recovered state. and I would drift closer to losing abstinence, and I would drift emotionally to becoming very emotionally uncomfortable. And I now understand why that was happening. I didn't understand it then. And about 6 years ago, I came into, somehow came into contact with this Vision for You group and was introduced to the Big Book. And then everything changed. Everything changed. For this is a program of attraction. And I saw people at these conferences, Vision for You conferences, that were in healthy body sizes, looked peaceful. When you talked to them, they were peaceful. They seemed happy. And they spent almost no time talking about food. And they talked about themselves as being recovered. And I'd never heard that term before, but in fact, it's on the first page of the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on the title page. And I wanted to have that. And so I started studying the Big Book as part of this vision meeting. And I came to understand that compulsive overeating is the exact same disease as alcoholism. The only difference is in the substance and the behavior, and perhaps some of the consequences, but it is the same disease and the treatment is the same. And the most important thing about coming to Vision for You and the Big Book is that everything got simplified. I came into Overeaters Anonymous a very angry, very confused, very frustrated person. And if you show me the 12 steps, usually at meetings there's on the wall, there'd be 12 steps, 12 traditions and the tools. I don't know how many of them, 15. So I come in a confused person and I'm confronted with 37 things, 38, 39, 40, whatever. That's very confusing to me. Now I understand those things are important, but Vision for You in the Big Book really simplified it. And what was simplified was number one, the nature of the disease. Very simple. It's a problem with my body. It's a problem with my mind. I needed to understand that. My body is not normal. It's not like other people. So when I get exposed to certain foods, behaviors related to eating or certain ingredients or volumes of food, it produces a very, very abnormal reaction. The phenomenon of craving. And not craving as we hear about it in the conventional term, you know, I'm craving pickles or I'm craving ice cream. No, it means my body now is compelled to eat more and more and more. And it's beyond my conscious control, and it's beyond anything that's happening in my life. And so I don't know when it will end and what the consequences will be, how much I'll consume, how long it'll take, how much of my life is going to be damaged by it. And for some things, some substances, some behaviors, it was gradual, but for others, it's almost immediate. But the ultimate result is the same, absolutely out of control. Excuse me. I needed to know that, and in fact, it gave me some relief to know that I was abnormal because I could forgive myself and say, oh, that's why that's happening. But of course, if that was the only problem, then that's okay. Identify those things and stop doing them. But unfortunately, that's not the only problem. The main problem is the second part of it, which is I have a problem with my mind. I'm not normal. I'm mentally ill, despite how I may look. I may sound like a normal person. I mean, on the external things look like a normal person, but if you were to look at my thinking, it's very, very abnormal. I'm obsessed with these foods. And so this mental twist comes in where no matter how much damage that those alcoholic foods, ingredients, and behaviors have done, I will eventually go back to them. My mind will convince me that it makes sense to do that. Because all I can remember is that brief period of where I get this heightened, abnormal, pleasurable sensation from them that other people don't get, that lasts for a few seconds. I can't remember the damage it's done. And as a result of this, I will go through this cycle for the rest of my life. And I had to see that in the first 3 years of Overeaters Anonymous and really see that as a result of this second part, I've been given a death sentence. I'm going to die. And the disease is permanent. It doesn't go away. It's progressive. It gets worse over time. And it's fatal. In my case, the fatality will probably be suicide because the binges are just so physically and emotionally uncomfortable. I can't tolerate them. So that was very helpful to me. Very simple. The other thing the Big Book gave me is a true understanding of the meaning of the word abstinence. Abstinence is a word that's thrown out a lot. And it's thrown out as the solution, the end point, the end result, the goal. And what I learned from the Big Book is that's simply not true. Because if abstinence was the solution, we just stop those alcoholic foods, stop those ingredients, stop those behaviors, everything will be good. The truth is, when I abstain, the real problem becomes very, very clear quickly. And the book uses the term, we are restless, irritable, and discontent. And these are words from the 1930s that are really restless, anxious, nervous, irritable, angry, discontent, depressed. That basically describes me, excuse me, when I'm not eating. I thought the problem was when I was eating and when I was obese, but that's not true. It's when I'm abstinent, I'm very uncomfortable. And in that state, the mental obsession comes back very quickly, and it seems like a good idea. So I'm stuck between the misery of abstinence and the misery of the disease. So it's very important for me to understand abstinence is not the solution. It actually is a very painful, uncomfortable, and unstable state for a compulsive overeater. It won't last. The true solution is entire abstinence combined with a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps, which removes that restlessness, that irritability, and that discontentedness. And so the mental obsession is gone, and I can feel normal one day at a time for the rest of my life. So again, the nature of the solution became very clarified and very simple. Nature of the solution, two parts. Number one, entire abstinence. Number two, a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps. And once I understood what abstinence was really about, then it becomes very, very clear that I must get through those steps very, very quickly. And we see this over and over in the Big Book. Those steps are done very, very quickly. Because as soon as I become abstinent, it's like I press a stopwatch. And the clock now is now ticking. So either I'm going to get restless, irritable, discontent, mental obsession, start the disease, or I'm going to get to that 12-step spiritual experience. Which do I want to choose? And when I realize that I have a death sentence, I'll do those things fast. If I think I just have kind of a minor problem, I won't do. So this simplified things. And then the last thing that became simple is the instructions. The instructions are actually really simple. But I needed somebody to guide me through them. And the first instruction is a promise of a recovered state, a feeling of permanence, one day at a time. It's on the title page, Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. That's the goal. It tells me right at the beginning. Second thing, precise instructions. Very precise. The forward to the first edition. Forward to the first edition on page XIII says that, let me just pull it up here. XIII. Yeah, so to show other alcoholics or compulsive overeaters precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. It's very, very clear. And then page 20 There is a solution. It says, let me just find it. It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. I really owe a debt of gratitude to recovered fellows who have pointed me to these things, and to some AA speakers. I'm not an alcoholic, but AA speakers like Joe and Charlie, who point to these precise instructions. Because the truth is, if you just hand me the 12 steps as they're written, then we can just interpret. I'm going to interpret how I'm going to do those things. Oh, my sponsor has me do it this way. Oh, my sponsor has me do it that way. And these instructions were written for a reason, because they produce a consistent, reproducible result. In page 17, there is a solution. The tremendous fact is we have discovered a common solution, a way out on which we can absolutely agree. The Big Book is credited to Bill W. as being the writer, but I think we know that really it was written by the first 100, because Bill was the one who physically wrote it, but he would write small parts, and then he would go to the group, and they would read it, edit it, take things out that they thought were inappropriate, things that were coming from Bill's ego, And so you have these 100 people who were hopeless alcoholics who've suddenly tapped into this power and are channeling this power. And once I started to see the effects of following these instructions, I started to truly believe that this is divinely inspired. And the first 100 understood that if it just goes by word of mouth, it will gradually become diluted. And so this is why they felt it was so important to write a book, so that it's precise and it's consistent and it's reproducible. And that's what I found to be true. So let's talk about the specific instructions. So what are the instructions from the big book for the daily maintenance and growth of a recovered life? Again, I said this assumes entire abstinence. So I need somebody to help me understand that. And this assumes that I've gone through steps 1 through 9 to the best of my abilities. And I've got some neutrality around the food. And I've started to have a spiritual experience, meaning that I'm more peaceful. My life is not so contingent on what's happening around me. But I've learned that first I was blocked by the food. Once I put the food down, then I start to see what the real problem is. And the book tells me it's this thing called self. And it describes it in different ways. But essentially, it tells me that I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. Self-delusion. Self-delusion are lies that I tell myself, about others, about God, about the world. Self-seeking. The book tells me that I'm trying to play the director of life. So I give life a script. This is how it should go based on my own narrow self-centered view of the world. And self-seeking are the things I do to try to get that script filled. Perfectionism, people-pleasing, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, it's a self-pity. So driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking. So I've cleaned up the record of my past, but I still have those things. And so as I go into the world, I need to be vigilant because those things are going to come up. And I now depend on this access to this higher power, however you choose to define that, or whatever you choose to call that, I call it God. And so it now becomes my responsibility to make sure that I'm not getting blocked off from this higher power by these character defects. And how will I know? When they're in play, I'll know because I'm emotionally uncomfortable. And so prior to this, I needed to be vigilant about the food. Now I need to be vigilant about my emotional state. So we're going to go and we're going to look at page 84. We're going to look at the paragraph that says, "This thought brings us to step 10. Which suggests we continue to take personal inventory, continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness." Then it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So I can be aware when I'm frightened. I can usually also be aware when I'm resentful. Oftentimes there's a combination of those two. I'm not very good at recognizing when I'm being dishonest. I'm not usually good at recognizing where I'm being selfish. So what I need to know is that when I'm emotionally disturbed, these things are happening. And this tells me how to deal with them. So when these crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to somebody we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. In this paragraph, the word continue is used, I believe, 3 times. It might be 4, but I believe it's 3. Continue, 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 continue. So this is warning me, actually, that I need to do this over and over and over and over and over in my life. And step 10 is a tool that is something I carry around with me throughout the day. It's not something I use at night. It's something I deal with in the moment. If we look at this paragraph, the number of adjectives or adverbs that refer to timing, how quickly we do it, are several. So it says here, we ask God at once. to remove them. We don't wait until the end of the day. We discuss them with someone immediately. We make amends quickly. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to somebody who can help. So a part of step 10 is, first of all, it starts with me. I have to be vigilant. I have to be aware. I'm becoming emotionally uncomfortable, and I have to stop. And who do I turn to? The first person, if you will, I turn to is God. Ask God to remove it. Oftentimes, for me, it requires another person. So I share it with another person. There's a number of ways that we can do that. And I take advantage of technology. There's a lot of different ways we can do it now with technology that we have. And so it says, we ask God to remove it, and we discuss it with somebody immediately. What does the word discuss mean? The word discuss means to take apart. So to see what's going on. So I'm going through my day. I'm suddenly angry at this person. Why? They did this. What's my part in this? I'm being selfish. They're not following my script. I'm being self-seeking. I'm getting my feeling of safety or value by the behavior of others. I'm being self-righteous. What's the dishonesty? The lie that I need this person to be this way, to feel peaceful, or the lie that this has anything to do with me. What's the fear in this? Oh, no, I won't get my way. Where's my trust and reliance? It's on finite self. It's not on God. And then it gives me instructions for how to get out of self. So sometimes there'll be an amend. Usually if there's an amend, it probably needs to be discussed with somebody before I make it, especially if it's a big amend. Sometimes I don't know if it's an amend or not. Oftentimes it's really just my thinking that's the problem. So I just acknowledge that it's my thinking that's the problem here. And only God can change that. And God can only do that by me working these steps. When we get emotionally disturbed, the book is telling us that we get drawn away from God. We get drawn away from God to self, towards self. And so the whole process is designed to bring us back to God, to get us out of self. So the final part of every step 10 is then I resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help. It doesn't say I resolutely go and help somebody. That doesn't necessarily have to happen, but I have to turn my thoughts to somebody I can help. And there are a number of ways of doing it. This is not a talk specifically on step 10, but praying for people is one way. Making outreach calls to fellows is another way. Or helping somebody that's in my immediate environment. How can I be of service to somebody? But it's a whole process of avoiding being drawn back into self and turning around, going back towards God. That's step 10. Continue. At once. Immediately, quickly, these are the words it uses. So it's reminding me that I must do this over and over. And I do a minimum of step 10 a day, because step 10 is a muscle that needs to be trained. It's not intuitive for me. So I'm going to give you an example when I get towards the end of my talk, when I take you through my day. But I do it on major things. And when I don't have one that's major, I do it on minor irritations, because I'm training my muscle. And I have a recovery network of I don't know, 6 or 8 fellows that I share step 10s with. And I use technology. I use the WhatsApp message system, so I don't have to get a hold of somebody. And it's changed my life. So step 10. There are days when I have 5 step 10s. If that's necessary, that is what's necessary. And my ego or my self-centeredness will tell me, oh, you've already done a step 10 on this. You don't have to do it again. Or, oh, you've already sent this step 10 to this person. They've already heard it. Don't do that again. You know, that's just my ego trying to prevent me from connecting to God, myself trying to prevent me from getting to God. So this step unblocks me, helps me to get connected to God. And the steps are in sequence for a reason. Step 10 comes before step 11, which comes before step 12, and there's a reason for that. And I am responsible for keeping myself unblocked. And again, I owe a debt of gratitude to several fellows, recovered fellows in this fellowship, who've taught me how to do a step 10 in an effective way that's actually very brief, but very thorough. And is based on the big book. And it's absolutely changed my recovery and saved my life. Okay. So that's step 10. Now, once I've unblocked myself and kept myself unblocked, then the whole purpose of this program really is to get to step 11. Now, it says the main purpose is to for me to be of maximal use to God and to the people around me. That's true. But I can only be of maximal use to God and the people around me if I am developing that relationship with God in step 11. And then to maintain that relationship and grow that relationship, I have to help others in step 12. But the main purpose of this, the whole purpose of this program, is to develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. And that's what step 11 is. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. So step 11, when we look at this book, and again, I have to be taught this, is, again, very specific. There are four parts to it. When we retire at night, on awakening, when we face indecision, and when we're agitated or doubtful. So let's look at the part about the nighttime review. It seems not logical or not intuitive for the step 11 part to start at night, but it actually makes perfect sense because it's reinforcing this idea of inventory. But the thing that's going to cause me problems, the thing that's going to block me off from God, is emotional disturbance. Because I will start to believe that the problem is outside of myself. When I'm doing step 10, as much as necessary during the day, and an effective step 11 nightly review, I begin to see that the world and its people are not the problem. The problem is within me. So the reason this is step 11 at night is, again, reinforcing this idea of inventory. So if we read this and go through, there's a number of things, there's a number of questions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. So this is an important word, constructively. I will destructively or obsessively review my day. This is reminding me that's not helpful. So it should be brief. So for me, it takes 5 or 10 minutes. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? The answer to this is always yes. And there's nothing wrong with that. I was, as one of our beloved fellows says, we'll never grow. I can't remember the exact terminology, but we'll never grow better than just an imperfect human being. You know, I'll never graduate from that. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? So I'm going to focus on this line that says, have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? This, to me, is a translation that says, is there a step 10 that is on your mind? So because I'm so used to my mind sometimes being all over the place, I can have something that's bothering me, actually. And I won't be consciously aware of it unless I sit down and think, is there anything bothering me? I'll be like, oh, yeah, right. Or I'll be obsessing about something. So it's reminding me, is there something going on in your mind that has a high emotional temperature? I like that term. Or is there something you're obsessing about? If there is, it needs to be done in the step 10. So step 10 is we ask God to remove it. We see what our part is. We share it with somebody else. And then is there an amend? And then we resolutely turn our attention to somebody we can help. And that takes 5 minutes. And I do it, as I said, using this WhatsApp voice message system. And I have a number of fellows that I share it with. And it calms the storm. So again, if we look at the language in this, there's language about timing. Anything that says something about doing something at once, it's making reference to step 10. We cannot hold on to emotional disturbances because they will accumulate, they will build. So have we kept something to ourselves we should be discussed with another person at once? Do we owe an apology? I think that's it's saying, is there a step 10 here? If there is, do one. And then what I do, and I'll go in more detail, is that I review my day. I just look, who did I interact with today? And when I do that, I find there's lots of minor irritation. Oh, yeah, that guy at the store, he wasn't very friendly to me when I paid at the cashier. Oh, yeah, that guy cut me off in public. In traffic. I wasn't really aware of that. Oh, yeah, that email somebody sent me, it kind of irritated me, the wording that they did. I just write it down in, like, very brief point form, like, you know, 5 words. And I see it. Oh, yeah. It doesn't really bother me. I get it out of my head. I don't do anything more detailed with it. And then I can answer these questions very honestly. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Yeah, I was. Yeah, and that's fine. I'm human. Then it asks me specific questions. Was I kind and loving towards all? Yeah, sometimes I was, sometimes I wasn't. Most times I'm not, but I'm getting much better. What could I have done better? Maybe I could have done that better. Maybe I could have been more patient there. Was I thinking about myself most of the time? Yeah, sometimes, but I'm getting better. Was I thinking of what I could do for others, of what I could pack into the stream of life? Was I thinking about others, not myself? Then again, it reminds me this is supposed to be constructive. So don't drift into worry, you know, fear. Don't drift into remorse. Remorse is just resentment towards self. And don't morbidly reflect. We inventory things, we share it, we make amends, and that's it. And then we move on with our life. Morbid reflection, just going over things over and over and over again with no particular purpose in mind. And again, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. And then, as always, we're going to see this over and over. As always, then who do we turn to? God. We ask God to forgive us our shortcomings. What corrective measures should I take? And then that's it. Go to bed. Sleep well. The whole purpose of this is not to carry things over to the next day. Step 10 and step 11, nightly review. Okay. We'll move on to the next three parts of step 11. And before we move to these parts, it's important to consider what is our concept of a higher power. I came into this program very agnostic, bordering on atheist. And what I've learned is it really doesn't matter. It matters very little. All I had to open, at step two, I had to open my mind to the possibility that there was a power that could help me with this compulsive overeating problem. And it had to have only two features. Number one, it had to be more powerful than the disease. And number two, it had to like me and want to help. That's it. And get rid of every other thing I've learned about God, religion, blah, blah, blah. And then just take the actions. What I found is that there are certain spiritual laws. If I do this, I will get this. Doesn't matter if I believe in God. Similarly, there are certain physical laws in life. I don't have to believe in the law of gravity, but if I go to the top of the roof and I jump off, I will fall at a certain speed. Similarly, I don't have to believe in God, but if I take these actions in sequence, I will get a particular result. And then I'm going to say, maybe there is this thing called God, and he's different than what, or he or she or it is different than what I thought. So before we look at step 11, we should consider what is my concept of God. And my concept of God has to be big. So the book gives us lots of different examples, but I like infinite intelligence, infinite love, infinite wisdom, infinite knowledge, infinite humor, and cares about me. When I have that idea in my mind, then why wouldn't I turn to that thing in my life? Rather than using my limited human intellect, my limited human memory, my limited human physical abilities. So we look at on awakening. As soon as I open my eyes, it's a battle between self and God. And so I wake up and usually my mind is going in some way. It's always frightened, worried. And the book tells me it's driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. So the longer I wait between my eyes opening and trying to get to God, the more chance that my day is going to go off track. And so the book gives us very specific instructions. So on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. So I like that. Those particular sentences I find very useful. And then it says on the next page, page 87, it says, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. And then in the next paragraph, it says, if we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select to memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. And so in my experience, and in experience with working with others, it really doesn't matter. Choose prayers that are useful, that are helpful, that we like. But the key thing is to do them, and the key thing is to do them very quickly on awakening. Otherwise, my mind will take things off track. And again, who do we go to? What does it say here? It says, we ask God. Common theme. We ask God. We ask God. We ask God. We're going to see that over and over and over again. So that's on awakening. It's very simple. It doesn't take much time. Then we're going to go to the third part. So far, first part was the nightly review. Second part was on awakening. Now we're going to go to the third part. Third thing we use step 11 for, and that's when we face indecision. So this is again on page 86. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. I think that line could also be referred to in thinking about our life, we may face indecision. And here the instructions are, we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. And then we relax and we take it easy. We don't struggle. Very simple. And it gives us a few cautions, which is that being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. And I think that's an important thing. If I decide tomorrow that God has given me instructions to sell all my possessions and move to India and join a Buddhist monastery, that might not be God's will. It might be for some people, but I'm pretty sure it's not God's will for me. So the book gives us further instructions on how to deal with indecision. They always start with going to God. But they sometimes will need other people. And so if we look at page 69, and this actually is the part on sex inventory, but we're going to translate it here. So on the bottom of page 69, it says, in meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our life situation. Not a sex situation, our life situation. Counsels with other persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. So it tells us here, when we face indecision, we ask God for an inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax, we take it easy, we don't struggle. Big decisions, counsel with others. Seek out others who are emotionally detached from my problem, who I respect, who I trust, get their opinion. Be careful about advice that's hysterical, I think it says. And then I go back to God because God is the final arbiter. And very often I'll do that, and then I'll still not sure what the decision is because I don't want to make the quote-unquote wrong decision. And so the book tells me, if we go to the story, acceptance is the answer. Page 420 says, acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to be done, and I leave the results up to him. However, it turns out that's God's will for me. If I put it through this process and the decision needs to be made, I make the decision. And it may be the wrong decision, but that may be God's will for me to learn something. So that's big book instructions on indecision. The fourth and final part of step 11 is when we're agitated or doubtful. I don't usually know when I'm agitated or doubtful. I know I just don't feel good. What's happening here? And in that state, I'm much, much more likely to act out in self-will, make my problems worse, block myself from God, and cause more problems. And so the book is telling me here, first of all, I'm no longer the director. So when I'm agitated or doubtful, the first thing I do is pause. God's instructions to me are say nothing, do nothing, write nothing, type nothing, and wait for further instructions, which is not my normal way of thinking. But now I'm no longer the director. And sometimes that pause is enough. and I get peaceful. Oftentimes that pause and God's instructions are do a step 10. Unblock yourself. Get out of self-centered. So again, it says, as we go through the day, when agitated or doubtful, we ask, who do we ask? We ask God for the right thought or right action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. So if we go back through these instructions, if we start at step 10, we see a common theme here. The common theme is we go to God. It doesn't say go to your sponsor. It doesn't say get to a meeting. I'm not saying that we don't need fellowship. I'm not saying that we don't need recovered fellows to guide us. But this book and this program is about teaching us to develop a dependence on a power greater than ourselves. These instructions do require other people. They do require fellowship. But the primary relationship is to God. Over and over, we ask God, we ask God, we ask God, we ask God, we ask God. That asking God is talking about prayer. So briefly on step 12, and then I'll tell you what one of my days look like. And again, step 12, I'm not going to spend much time because it's a whole topic on itself. But there's a few important points that I want to make. Step 12, as it's written, is written in three parts, and I think for a reason. The first part says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. This is telling me that I am the message. My demeanor is the message, not my words. My primary responsibility to another compulsive overeater is to maintain and grow my spiritual experience through step 10 and 11. Otherwise, I have nothing to offer. Anything I offer will be based on self. So the first part of step 12 is, are you doing step 10 and 11 as directed in the big book, Stephen? The analogy I like is when we're on a plane, in case of emergency, they say the oxygen mask comes down and you're looking after somebody that needs assistance, put your own oxygen mask on first. Could sponsor 30 people. If I'm not doing step 10 and 11, I will relapse. Second part of step 12, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters. So it doesn't matter whether it's received or not. That's irrelevant. But I must try. And what is this message? This message is the nature of the disease, the nature of the solution. And the solution is about connection to a higher power. I've tried to wiggle out. I think if you hear my story, I've tried to wiggle out of every aspect of this program. And the only thing that taught me is the pain of the disease. I must sponsor. I must. There are other ways to carry the message, but I don't know anybody who has long-term recovery who's not sponsoring. I've tried to learn the book on my own. It doesn't work. I can only learn it by teaching to people. There's some sort of spiritual thing happening there. When I teach, I learn. When I try to learn it on my own, I don't learn anything. And the final part of step 12 is, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This is an often forgotten part of step 12. And what are these principles? Stop playing God to myself and to others. God is the director, my director. Trust and rely on God, not on finite self. Love and tolerance of others is my code. We stop fighting everything and anyone. And of course, I could not remotely practice these principles based on my own self-will. I can only do this if I'm rigorously practicing step 10 and 11. So let me take you through my day, and I'll give you a couple of examples. So on awakening, again, as soon as my eyes open, it becomes a battle between self-will and God. And the longer I let that battle go on, the more likely it's going to be self-will. So I try to pray as soon as possible. That may be in bed. That may be in the shower, and I'm not perfect on it, but I do it. And I have a few prayers. I basically just repeat what's been said. I say, good morning, God. As I consider my plans for today, I pray that you'll direct my thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And then I do the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, the prayer of St. Francis, the Lord's Prayer. And I also ask God to help me accept every person, place, or thing as being exactly as they're meant to be. I think that comes from step 9. But the truth is, it doesn't matter which prayers. They have to have the same idea and be done. Done quickly and be done. However, what the prayers are is not that important. And then I get on with my day. So that doesn't take very long. I try to meditate. You're just sitting, meditating. Sometimes I'm successful, sometimes not, but I'm working on that. But the prayer is the most important part. That can't be excluded. If I sit for 5, 10, 15 minutes and meditate, I feel better. But I'm not perfect about that. Get on with my day. Got step 10 in my pocket because I'm going to need it inevitably. It will come up. I'll give you an example. Very recently, I live in an apartment. I rent or a condo, which I rent. I've been here for about 10 years. I have a good relationship with my landlord. Recently, I got an email from him saying that parents are sick. He wants to move them into the apartment, so I'll have to vacate in a couple of months. And immediately, I got agitated and doubtful. And my initial inclination was to send him a nasty email saying, this is not legal. I'm going to get a lawyer. Thankfully, I didn't do that. I paused and I asked God for the right thought and the right action. And the right thought and the right action was to do nothing and then do a step 10. So I did a step 10 and saw my part. What was my part? It was being selfish. He wasn't following my script. And I'm seeing it only from my narrow self-centered perspective. He has every right. He's the owner of this condominium. It's legal. In where we live, that's one of the laws. If you're moving in your family members, that's legal. You just have to give people notice. The self-seeking part is first of all, I'm getting my feeling of safety or value from external things, people, places, and things. I'm being self-righteous. I would do the exact same thing if that was me. The dishonesty, the lie that he's doing something wrong, the dishonesty that I would do something different, the lie that I need him to be another way in order to be peaceful, not true. What's the fear? The fear is that he's taking advantage of me, thinks I'm somehow inadequate, but also fear of losing what I have, my comfortable living arrangement. So where's trust and reliance? It's on finite self, not God. So I ask God so what would God have me be? God wants me to relax, take it easy. He's running the show, not me, and not my landlord. But love others. Focus only on my side of the street and be of service. And was there any amends? No, I didn't do anything. I could have, but I didn't, thank God. And what's my plan to get out of self? So I prayed for people that don't have housing, people that don't have the financial resources that I do. And I felt better. And then I sent my landlord an email saying, thanks for your message. Let me think about this. I'll get back to you in about 48 hours. I would never have done that. Never, 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 never. 48 hours later, I reached out to him and I thanked him for our great relationship over the last 10 years and told him I completely understand what he's going through. And then does he have flexibility on when we can move out? And we negotiated that. And then I was left with indecision. What am I going to do now? So I prayed to God and was directed to get counsel of others. So I came up with 4 people I trusted, friends, who were not too emotionally detached to where I was going to live. And I asked them what they thought, because I wasn't sure what to do. Where should I move to? Should I rent? Should I buy? Blah, blah, blah. I got their feedback. And then I went back to God, because God's going to be the final arbiter. And then I went and I got a real estate agent, started looking at places. One day I got an email from the landlord saying his situation with his parents has changed. He's been so happy having me as a tenant. Would I be willing to consider stay? That can only be God, because I would have destroyed that relationship with my first reaction to his email. And so I'm in the same place as I am now. So that's how I use step 10, step 11. Continue going through my day. I work a very stressful job, high pressure. Nothing follows my script. I constantly have to pause, constantly have to do step 10 so that I can get out of self-centeredness. I sponsor one person at a time and I take them through the steps quickly. So that means I'll have a brief communication with them about where things are at, what assignments they've done, doing step work with them. That doesn't take too much of my time, unless we're going through their step 5. I'm a member of, I have a recovery network of people that I share step 10s with, so they share them with me and I give them feedback. And I do that with the WhatsApp voice. voice hack, which is brilliant because I don't need to do things in the moment. I love that. And yeah, I give people feedback, and that's step 12 work. Nighttime review. So at night, I constructively review my day. And so what I do is I used to have just a piece of paper, but now I do it on my phone. And I just look at my day. Where did I come in contact with people? Because that's always the problem. Either direct contact or on the phone or text message or on email. And I look at, oh, wow, there was a lot of little minor irritations. I didn't like the way that person worded that email. Oh, I didn't like it the way that person did that. Oh, I didn't like it the way that person did that. Or watching the news or social media. And it turns out in every day, there's usually like five or six, sometimes more, little minor irritations that I wasn't aware of. And I just write them down. Hey, that person, a couple of words, did this. I don't go into any analysis, but getting them out of my head is huge. And then I ask myself, before I do that, I ask myself, is there some thing with a high emotional temperature or I'm obsessing about? Do I need to do a step 10? Very recently, there was. I was very uncomfortable before I went to bed, and I was obsessing about something, some fear. So I did a step 10. I sent it to a fellow, and then I continued my brief nightly review, and then I was done. And then I answered the questions, and almost always I've been resentful. Almost always I've been frightened. That's okay. Almost always there's things I can do better. But I don't spend much time on it, 5 or 10 minutes. I don't beat myself up. Then I go to bed peaceful. Done. That is the end of my day. So that is how I weave in step 10, step 11, and some of step 12 into my daily activity. And it really doesn't take that much time. And my life has been transformed by following these very simple instructions. And the whole purpose of the instructions is to get connected to this power greater than myself that solves my problem, not my problems, my problem. Because it doesn't matter what my circumstances are, the answer to all of them is draw closer to God. And then I can deal with anything. And that's all I have to say today. I hope that was helpful. And I'll be happy to take any questions. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for this superbly clear and compelling presentation this morning. Such a powerful, well-organized share. Thank you very, very much. Truly a message of depth and weight from Stephen G. Share ID for today, 20,425. That's 20425. Stephen's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to question and answer with our remaining time here. You can pose a question, star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Letty G.
Elena C.
Philadelphia.
Elena.
Loretta H.
Elena.
Judith S. P.
Loretta.
Janice
P.
Susan C. And Susan C. I'm going to stop at Susan C. for now, then we'll reassess our time. I have Letty G., Elena C., Loretta H., Judith S. P., Janice P. M., and Susan C. Okay, let's start with Letty G., please. Questions only.
Hi. Hi, Stephen. Wow. I'm relatively new to this program, and you've cleared up so many things. I just finished my steps, and the best is yet to come. But I just want to thank you for your share, and I want to tell you that I'm definitely going to listen to this again so that I can take better notes and clarify some of what you've said and implement some of what you mentioned. Thank you so much. And that's it. I'm grateful. Grateful to all.
Thank you, Letty. Thank you very much.
Grateful to you, Leah. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Okay. Opportunity for questions. Next question comes from Elena C.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Leah. Thank you for your service. Good morning, Steve. Thank you so much for all you shared. I got so much out of it. I have a question. Relates to my own experience. If when you said that you go very quickly with your sponsee one at a time over steps, And then how do you handle sponsees who already recovered and they're done with their 12 steps?
Thank you, Elena. That's a really good question, and one that's come up a lot, and one that I had to figure out over the course of my recovery, and I think one that's controversial. The Big Book is very specific about that one-on-one work with other compulsive overeaters is vital. But that's every story in the Big Book, it's time limited. So we hear about Abby Thatcher bringing the message to Bill Wilson, taking Bill Wilson through the steps, and then Bill Wilson turns his attention to carrying the message. We don't hear anything more about Abby and Bill's relationship. Similarly, with Bill presenting the message to Dr. Bob, Bill takes Dr. Bob through those steps in a very quick manner, and then they both turn their attention to helping others. We don't hear much about, Bob called Bill every day for the rest of his life. I'm not saying that people shouldn't do that, but I'm saying, what are the instructions in this book? And so my approach is, I had this in the past where I had the sponsor for life kind of thing. And that's fine. People can develop whatever relationships they want. But let's look at the instructions. What are the instructions here? And am I following those instructions? So I can follow those instructions within the context of a relationship with somebody who I'm always sharing with my sponsor. That's fine. But it's not necessary. So it's vital to work with somebody one-on-one for that period of time going through the 12 steps. That's what I found. And what I found after that is what I absolutely need is a circle of recovered fellows around me. And I actually have found that I feel better and safer having more than one person. So I have 6 to 8 people, and some fall off, either they relapse or whatever, and I'm constantly on the lookout developing relationships with recovered fellows. So I can follow these. When we look at the specific instructions here, it tells us when we need other people. And so I use these other people, and they, quote unquote, use me when they need that. So in answer to your question, what do I do with sponsees? So, and this may be a long answer, so I don't want to take too much time, but they say Dr. Bob sponsored over the course of his life several hundred people. How is it possible he did that if after he took those people through the steps, they called him every day? It's not possible. So how people want to organize their relationships after they've done through the steps is fine. What I do is I speak to people every day for the course of that, whatever it takes, 6 to 8 weeks to get through those steps. After that, we talk once a week to make sure they're implementing them. And then after that, I leave it open-ended. I am available to talk to you anytime. But what I want you to do is to focus on the actions so that you can develop a relationship with a higher power, not a dependence on me. Because what I found in my own relationships, when I had this kind of sponsor long-term, I became dependent on my sponsor and felt very threatened when he wasn't available to me. And that is not, that actually is not necessary. So I don't abandon people, but I leave it in their court, and I don't arrange regular phone calls unless it's step 10. Yeah, you call me for step 10, or you have a question around indecision, or a question of how to carry the message, or it's just an outreach call. Otherwise, I'm teaching people the dependence on me. And the book is very specific about that. So I know there's disagreement about that, but that's just what works for me. I hope that answers your question, Elena.
Thank you, Elena C. Loretta H., your turn to pose a question.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you for hearing me. And Stephen, what a great digestion and interpretation. It was awesome of 10, 11, and 12. My question is, you spoke about spiritual laws, and I interpret that with is, and I might be missing something, is the Four Absolutes, the 12 Steps, and the 10 Commandments. Are those, or are there more, or am I off guard? That's my question. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for your question. Yeah, first of all, I'm no spiritual guru, and I know very little, to be honest. All I know is what I've learned from the Big Book. What I mean when I say spiritual laws is that there are things that I find to be that I found to be true that surprised me. If I do this, I'll get this. That's what I mean by law. And so it's not, so I thought that I had to believe in God. I didn't. All I had to do is take specific actions. And when I took those actions, I got a result. I got neutrality around food and I got peaceful. And it proved to me that there is this higher power. So if I take these actions, I will get this result. It doesn't matter what I believe. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Loretta H. Next up, Judith S.P. Star 1,
good
Judith.
Morning.
Yes.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, everyone. And a special thank you with gratitude, Stephen, to you. I felt that from the beginning of your share, and I'll be brief on my comment, I felt like I was traveling a spiritually healthy, clear emphasis on the instruction manual. And that was really helpful for me. A few times, I didn't keep account, you kept saying, it doesn't take much time. It doesn't take much time. And I know for me, having been a compulsive overeater and very, very impulsive, I wanted everything done quickly. I wanted it done yesterday, blah, blah, blah. If you could comment, because I have about 16 hours every day connected to God and service. And so I'm trying to slow down and digest more and take in more God's will and God's message rather than a quick, let's get it done so I can go on to whatever. Can you address a little bit more that it doesn't take very much time?
Yeah, sure. So if we look at going through steps 1 through 9, that does take time. The step 4 inventory and the step 5 can take a lot of time. But what I mean by that is if I look at the recovery stuff I do each day, the prayer in the morning doesn't take much time. You can meditate for a period of time. That doesn't take much time. When I do step 10s, they take about 5 minutes. So if I have one step 10 a day, 5 minutes. There are days when I have multiple, but that's fine. Let's say I have 5. That's 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. When I'm working with a sponsee, usually, as we're working through the steps, we'll be focusing on different parts of the big book. And those calls may be a 5-minute call. They may be a 30-minute call. And the stuff that takes the most time is going through their step 5. So it may be a few blocks of a couple of hours. But on an average day, it's not that much. And then when I do my nighttime review, it takes 5 or 10 minutes. So that's the rest of my day. So that isn't much time, the rest of my day to do whatever I want. Now, step 11, Bill Wilson described this as a spiritual kindergarten. It's just the beginning. And I can deepen and widen that channel in step 11 by spending my whole day trying to connect with God. There's nothing wrong with that. What I'm talking about is what is necessary. What is necessary to maintain my recovery? Because that's what that's why I'm here. I want to be normal. So how much time do I need to spend every day to be normal? I don't have to spend 16 hours. That's not a criticism. We can, step 11, we can spend as much time spending with our higher power, and I'm sure that's great. Everybody's a bit different. But what I'm talking about is what is the minimum necessary to maintain recovery? That's what I'm interested in. And that's what I try to teach people when I'm guiding them through the steps. I hope that answered your question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judith S.P. Janice P.M., your turn.
Pardon me. Thank you so much, Leah. And my goodness, Stephen, I never heard you before, but I'll always remember you. You just simplified the manual on how to, you know, get recovered. Now, when your third, you went through the 3 parts of step 12, and I'm more interested in the third part. I want to know how you do with your sponsees. Do you go right to step 12 after step 11 in the chapter? Or do you help by practicing that third part by going over the chapters with your sponsor on wives, the family after, or the employees? Because I find, I mean, you probably do too, that there are wonderful instructions on how to practice that third part of the 12th step. What do you do? If you do it, yeah, have it all.
Yes, 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 yes. Thank you for that question. Okay, let me think how to answer that. So the first thing I'm going to say is that we are in, I tell every sponsee, we are in a race against time. So once you put that food down, the clock is ticking. And we must get to that spiritual experience quickly. So I used to think, because I'm perfectionist, I'm a compulsive overeater and a bit obsessive, that I had to teach sponsees everything. That's not true. There are very specific instructions that need to be, that tell us what actions need to be taken to get to that recovered state. And so I try to go through the various parts of the big book and get them to focus on those things and taking those and following those instructions. And that should take a few weeks. But I also understand and I stress to people that you are just beginning. Your life will depend on constantly going through this big book, constantly learning about this big book. So this is just the beginning. So I don't feel the need to take people through every single part of the big book. They're gonna come to that understanding on their own. I tell them you're just the beginning. You're just in the beginning. So for me, I'm sponsoring people, but I'm still listening to Vision for You meetings, big book studies, and I'm still seeing things that are popping out from the big book that I didn't understand. So yes, those things are important, but for me, it's more important to get them to focus on the salient, important instructions, take the specific actions, get to this recovered state as quickly as possible, and then make them understand they're going to have to go back over this big book for the rest of their lives, and they're going to learn more and more and more. So once we get to step 12, I show them how I sponsor, and I say, put yourself out there, start sponsoring. This is going to ensure that you maintain your recovery. Thank you.
Thanks, Janice PM. Susan C., your turn.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Thanks so much, Leia. And Stephen, you have such a gift for crystal clear understanding and presentation. Thank you so much for your organized, well thought out talk. I really enjoyed hearing your step 10s. And what I want to ask about, based on my own experience, is that there are times where, as you described, they feel really effective and I feel that shift happening. And there are other times not. And for me, the distinction is, am I willing to surrender that dishonesty, et cetera, or am I just doing it by rote? And the reason I mention that is because I'm curious what your experience is around that. I guess I'm saying that it's not always about just doing a step 10 for me. I really have to be in the right headspace where I'm not just doing it by rote. I wondered what your experience is. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. Yeah, there definitely are times when there are step 10s I do where I get immediate peace and where it's quite amazing because a short time afterwards, I can't even remember what that step 10 was about. Like, that's just a miracle. There are some step 10s where I don't feel that. And it's usually because I have not effectively done the final part, which is resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help. That is the action I have to take to get out of self-centeredness. And sometimes I don't want to do something. So I'll do something that's easy. When the emotional temperature is really high, I just want to sit here and pray for somebody, but I need to go and do and resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help by taking some action. So reaching out to somebody, how are they doing, not talking about myself. That's the most common reason why my step 10 doesn't feel effective. The other reason is I see step 10s. First of all, I see these character defects as being like these huge granite rocks. And in step 6 and 7, we've come entirely ready for God to take those away. We humbly ask God to take them away. But God requires our cooperation. And our cooperation is step 10, which is kind of like a chisel that allows God to remove those with our cooperation. And sometimes I just need to keep chiseling. So I have to do multiple step 10s on the same thing over and over. That's just the way it is, because those character defects are so ingrained around that issue. So if it's not feeling right, it's because either I didn't share it, I need to share it with somebody, or I did not resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help. So I'm still in a bit of self-centeredness, or I just need to keep doing that step 10 over and over again. But there, it is never, I found in my experience, it is never the wrong answer to do a step 10. It is always the right answer to do a step 10. And there's no limit on how many step 10s can be done. The only way I can see my own part and get closer to God. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Susan C. Okay, let's see if we can squeeze in one more question. Star 1 to unmute.
Pete B.
Canada.
Alexis F.
Denise.
Pete B., you're it.
Meet again.
Go right ahead with
thank
your question.
Thank you, Leia. Thank you for your service, Leia. Always greatly appreciated. Stephen, thank you for a very articulate and well-presented presentation. So my question is this. The step 10 says that we watch out for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, and we ask God at once to remove them when they crop up, and I was paraphrasing there. What's removing it? Is God removing it, or is it the use of WhatsApp or discussing with somebody else that's removing it?
Yes. Thank you, Pete. That's actually a really great question. And here's what I've learned, that God is removing it, but God will more effectively remove it for me if I humble myself. And by sharing it with somebody else, I humble myself. So a step 10 that has a high emotional temperature, I'm really uncomfortable. 100% I need to share it with somebody. And when I'm sharing it with somebody, I'm telling this person I am an imperfect person. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm self-seeking, I'm dishonest, which is the truth. I'm not criticizing myself as a human being. I'm not saying I'm no good. I'm saying I'm a human being created by God, just like this, just like you. And when I do that, God will more effectively remove that resentment. That has been my experience. So there's a reason I think I'm not a spiritual guru. Lots of traditions have these spiritual traditions or religious traditions have this concept of confession, sharing with others. And I think the whole purpose is because I am a prideful, self-centered person. I don't want other people to know that I'm imperfect. When I share it with other people, I'm sharing what is our common challenge as humans, which is we're imperfect. When I do that, God can get to me easier and can remove that resentment or whatever more effectively. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, PB. Thanks to all who posed questions. And, of course, thank you, Stephen, for giving so much of yourself to all of us this morning. Thank you for such a precise and powerful message of depth and weight. Really.
My pleasure.
Magnificent. Thank you very much. Share ID for today, 20,425. That's 20425. Let's close now from page 164. Of course, you all know that it's in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.